Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is an Invincibles podcast. So I hope you've been enjoying our fabulous summer output of podcasts. I can remember the days when the summer was footloose and fancy free and you didn't need to think about football every single week. You would have had Wimbledon and then the back pages of the, even papers like the Daily Record would have had maybe Robert Miller and the Tour de France followed by the inside two pages covering the qualifying for the Open Championship. And you'd have gone into page four and found out that Celtic were actually on a pre-season tour and some tiny three-line paragraph would have given you the score of some 6-0 victory over some Austrian part-timers. But it's full on now. European football has begun and ended for two Scottish clubs before we're in the second week of Wimbledon, as per the lesser clubs in Scotland are letting the side down. To be fair, one of them, it was a first ever foray into European football, but they were still utter garbage. Hopefully Celtic will continue to fly the flag beyond Christmas for Scottish football this season, and that'll be great. So the reason why I think that they might be able to do that is because we've got a fantastic manager with a fantastic side, and that is what the context of this week's podcast is. We brought in Mr. David Friel, a podcast guest 7 years ago, when he gave us his first Celtic game and first Celtic hero. So do you mean to cover that again for the podcast? David is a former journalist with the Celtic View, now writes for The Sun, but more importantly, for the purposes of this podcast, he did the book The Invincibles about the fantastic season which has just passed. And for those of you listening who can be bothered listening all the way to the end, we're going to have a quiz competition. You can email in podcasts at CelticUnderground.net. That's podcasts, plural, at CelticUnderground.net. And we will have a question for you to answer, and the winner will get a copy of the book. But this is me, Harry Brady, passing over to the chat with Harry Brady and Mr. David Friel. I'm now joined by journalist and author David Friel. So David, you've been on the podcast before, so you don't need to go through first Celtic game, first Celtic hero. But for those of who don't remember, when were you on the podcast?
It was September 2010. It was the night Scotland beat Liechtenstein, Steam at Man scored in the 97th minute. With a header, and that was to promote the Century Boys book, which is a history of the 28 guys that have scored 100 goals for Celtic or more. That was my first book. I wrote that with Paul Cuddy from the Celtic View, and Invincible is the second book, which is pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, so you write a book with somebody else. I suppose writing with somebody, writing, they're two different books, aren't they? Because one's looking back in the past, one's a catalogue of events now.
Present,
A contemporaneous report. So, first of all, what made you decide to write the first book, The Century Boys?
It was always the idea we had at the time. Myself and Paul, we used to, I spent 4 years working for the Celtic View, and we used to do features, looking back at history, and we just had an idea one day. I can't even remember whose idea it was, just to do the book, the 28 guys, and we wrote it in a way, there's basically a chapter on every single player, going way back to John Hartson, was obviously the last one. And we just did it, just going through every player, first goal, last goal, a bit about them and everything. And it was good. It was an interesting. I did 14 chapters. Paul did 14 chapters. So it was a real joint effort. And it actually came out. I'd left Celtic to go into local government work at that stage. And it actually came out around about then. But so it's still on sale. 7 years on. Give it a wee plug.
So how do you start the process of deciding you're going to write a book? Do you try and think about, this is my style of writing, or do you not even get that complicated? Do you just go, I'm just going to start writing and see how it flows?
That Century Boys book was pretty straightforward, in the sense that here's the history, here's what happened, there you go. With the new book, Invincible, it was more about, I had been immersed in it obviously from the start of the season in my job with the Scottish Sun. I was in Slovenia for 12 days with Celtic covering. I was in Gibraltar, I was in Kazakhstan, did another couple of Champions League trips. I was at probably the majority of the domestic games, all the pre-season friendlies at the start, and spending that much time around the team, around the players, coaching staff, Brendan, I got an idea of something brewing. You know, you could just tell. I mean, I've you know, covered Celtic professionally for what, since 2006, when I started working for the Celtic View. 4 years ago, I was tracking, kind of ended up turning out, and you know, covered it extensively under Neil Lennon, Ronnie Dyla, and now Brendan. And I think I could just tell it was something special, even just in pre-season, listening to Brendan speaking to the players, speaking to people behind the scenes who are basically saying, this guy's a real deal, this guy, there's something happening here. Mm-hmm. And I think at that stage you were waiting to see how the Champions League went. Mm-hmm. And when Celtic qualified for the Champions League, everything for me, just that, I think that was so crucial to what followed. The League Cup win then takes it another level. Celtic by that point are pretty much won the league. Mm-hmm. And at that stage I'm thinking, well, there's a book in this season, and it's probably totally different from the Century Boys in the sense that I wanted to write a book that wasn't just month by month, game by game, mm-hmm. match reports, stats, etc. It's more about, if you know, that you won't get any match reports in the book, you won't get any just blow by blow accounts of games or anything. I wanted to look at themes, I wanted to look at the season overall, I wanted to look at specific points that were crucial, I wanted to look at Brendan's methods. So it was a bit more creative, it was probably a bit more creative license to just go and, mm-hmm. and tell little anecdotes and, you know, things that I'd seen, things that I'd picked up, just little, you know, wee gems of information along the way. And I started writing it probably at the start of September. I just kind of had the idea, I started kind of just playing about a couple of chapters, mm-hmm. and then as things progressed at the turn of the year, I thought, you know what, there really is something in this. And I started working with Backpage Press, who, if any listeners have maybe read Greenhunter's Barcelona book, Andrea Pirlo book, Pep mm-hmm. Guardiola book. So, you know, the guys, Martin and Neil at Backpage, are really, they like the football books. It's a book about football, you know, it's mm-hmm. a proper football book.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted. And, you know, it just went from there and pretty much finished it 2 days after the Scottish Cup final.
So, to get back to the start, you said you knew things were different with Brendan. Mm-hmm. So did the Gibraltar game, did the Lincoln Red Imps game take you back at Celtic lost that game?
Yeah, a huge surprise, because when we were there for, that was a long stint, you know, we were covering the Celtic tour in Austria, and Slovenia and Austria, for about 12 days. But even the fact that we went straight to Gibraltar for me spoke volumes about what Brendan was trying to do and the standards he set, because I think Celtic had beaten Olympia Ljubljana, and after the game the guy that was organising the tour, the sort of travel agent, for want of a better word, said to us, by the way guys, you might not be going straight home, because we were due to go home a couple of days later on the Sunday, I think. And we said, what do you mean? He said, well, Lincoln Red Imps had beaten the team from Estonia. Uh-huh. So Brendan was basically of a mind, well, there's no point in going back to Glasgow on the Sunday to come out to Spain on the Monday. He just wanted to go straight to Spain to get it and then out of Gibraltar. Uh-huh. So he said, if you guys want to come with us, you can come. And it was quite a kind of eye-opener, because it was that small attention to detail.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't want his players getting on a couple of flights. He would rather they stayed an extra night away, but they were rested up and had a chance to train properly. So he'd left no stone unturned. I mean, every player he spoke to and every guy behind the scenes, you know, they kept saying, this guy's a real deal, this guy's a different level in terms mm-hmm. of standards. I mean, speaking to John Kennedy for, it was a kind of newspaper press conference, and we spoke to him about the standards, and he said, you know, he's taken up a notch, really. And we said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, everything, you know, the cones have to be out a certain way, they have to be colour coordinated, the pitch has to, the dimensions have to be properly, if you're writing out a session plan, it has to be green and red pens, you know, I mean, real attention to detail. Now, people might think, well, that's the way it should be, but not all managers are the same. Some managers don't really go into specifics as much as him. Brendan just knew what he wanted. He demanded the best standards. The players were fitter. The pre-season games were very good. Then everybody traipses to Gibraltar, and I genuinely couldn't believe what I was seeing. But never at the stage thought they said we're going to get out. But it was still a real sort of what's happening here.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember as well, Brendan was asked if the game was an embarrassment, and he said no. And that caused consternation because people were saying, well, of course it was an embarrassment. But
do you think
that was part of that? Don't apologise, we are moving forward here, and I'm not going to have any negativity in that drive forward.
Yeah, and I think it was also a bit of man management, in the sense that he knew, he was pretty relaxed, and again that comes back to his experience and why he was really ready for this job, and that he knew if he'd come out and absolutely annihilated the players and said they weren't good enough and this and that, straight away you're off to a kind of loser. Mm-hmm. Straight away, as you're saying, negativity. Straight away players are thinking, this guy, you know, it's the first game.
If he came out and said there's 14 players that I don't like you.
Yeah, it's an embarrassment. No, I'm not going to tolerate it. He was very calm, and he kept saying these things happen. And it was a result that, because there was nothing else really on at the time, and it's kind of middle of the summer, it was tennis, golf, Celtic, Brendan's going to get some spotlight anyway because it was his first job since Liverpool. There was the whole team from Gibraltar was beating Celtic, nobody could really believe it, but he was very calm, very collected, and just kept saying, it's half time, the team will turn this round, there's no issues here, you know, don't worry. And it was true. I mean, yeah. The 3-0 return game could have been 5 or 6, but I think he also made it clear to the players privately that they had to help in the game. But bear in mind, at that time he'd probably only been in the job a couple of weeks, and he was still trying to figure out who played where, who was going to do a job for him full time and for the long term. And if you look at the team that started that game compared to the team at the end of the season, it's pretty much unrecognisable, you know.
And the other aspect of that, and I often try and think of football and put it into the everyday life of me and other people listening to it. Just your point there, that about him deciding that they were not going to come back to Glasgow and then go back out, to make that decision in a management position, but you have to be really confident because you're not the manager who's the ultimate responsible. Peter Lawwell's chief executive with the ultimate financials power. To make that decision, you have to be exceptionally self-confident and self-assured in your own position.
Yeah.
To be able to just say, no, this is what's happening.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, probably, in terms of he was ready for the job. The way he handled that situation, the way he then handled the defeat, you know, he's a relatively young manager. He was 43 when he took the Celtic job, but his years at Swansea, his years at Liverpool, he's used to the, you know, the big clubs, the big league. And he was not with self-confidence assured. He knew that was the right thing to do, and it was the right thing to do. I know Celtic lost the game, but it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And it was the same going to Astana. He made sure it was the best of planes. You know, the plane was unbelievable. And he also, we talk about small details, and Brendan talks about that a lot. It's a small details. And one of the chapters is, obviously he speaks Spanish. He says he's lost at Toledo's. And that's one of the chapters is called, because it's about the small details that he puts so much importance on. And even Astana, when they got there, he said, right, it was a massive time difference. It was really, really strange, but they got together, Glenn Driscoll, Chris Davis, Brendan, John Kennedy, Stevie Woods, and said, right, what's the best thing to do in terms of making sure the players are in prime shape, in terms of rest and everything? And they came up with the idea, basically, that they're just going to stay on Scottish time, Celtic Park time, UK time. And so the players didn't go to sleep until basically the middle of the night, just in terms of the way it worked out. I mean, speaking to Craig Gordon the night before the game, and he said, well, beating a dinner at 1 or 2 in the morning, local time. He says, it's strange, but he says, we just have to do it, it's the right thing to do. And that was another kind of small little thing in the grand scheme of things, but it made a big difference, because the game the next night, a really tough place to go, Stan, a really strange place to beat and everything about it, but it was a great result for Celtic, 1-1, especially if you look at personnel, Owen O'Connell was a centre half next to Ambrose that night.
Yeah.
And if you look at the game, it's, you know, so little things like that, you were just looking, I was looking at it, and I found it fascinating. I'm thinking, this is a top operator. Celtic paid a lot of money, paying a lot of money annually to get Brendan Rodgers, but he knew what he was doing.
I think the nervousness of the Hapoel game has made people forget the Astana game. It was tight at Celtic Park.
I know. I mean, you're 1-0. I mean, it's one each, and you think Lee Griffiths scores an away goal, that's huge. Celtic will finish the job. Lee Griffiths scores again, and then the Astana equalise, and you're looking at it and you're thinking this could go either way, because suddenly you felt as if a bit of momentum was Astana away, but then he puts Dembele on, Dembele first goal, first ever professional penalty. He'd never had a professional penalty before, right, last minute. And even then, I think the team probably gained a lot of confidence going through those, you know, I think from that tie especially. And even after that game, it was nervous inside Celtic Park that night. You know, it was really, really fraught, and there was a bit of, when it was one each and keeping the ball, there was a, you know, moans and groans. And he came out after the game, I don't know if you remember, and actually said to the fans, listen, guys, you need to just stick with us. You know, don't you get nervous because then everybody else gets nervous. But I think that just sums up the Champions League qualification. I mean, they are some of the most fraught games you'll ever watch in your life, and I don't even know what it'd be like to play in, because it must be so much pressure on you.
Well, it is.
Look at Beersheba away as a prime example.
I'm not going to sound too blasé about things, but Celtic were going to win the league last season. Who did you put down your predictions?
Celtic 2-0.
That's fine. Because genuinely, I thought if Rangers finished fourth, they should be chuffed to bits. That was my looking at last season. Because I just thought they were a team. It was hearing professional footballers continually talking about it's the pace every week of the top league. On a one-off game, there's not that much difference between the top of the second tier and the bulk of the top tier in Scotland. But it's the playing at that pace every week that it takes a while. You forget that that's the pace it's played at, and it takes a while to get.
Yeah, I mean, I do think. I mean, it's a totally different. I think as well, in terms of turnover of players for Rangers last season, I think Celtic were always going to, I mean, because you know, when Celtic started signing the likes of Scott Sinclair and Dembele came, I know he was young but with a real reputation, and then you could see gradually the difference Brendan Rodgers was making to the fitness of the Celtic players. Then I think Celtic were always going to be far too strong. Nobody probably misses 39 points and 30 points between Celtic and Aberdeen, but I do think the Champions League was crucial in that as well.
Well, because that's what I was going to say, when you're then your odds on to win the league, then Champions League qualification almost becomes like league decider stuff. The level of importance.
Well, and this is, I mean, if you look at the reasons why Brendan ended up at Celtic, for me, Ronnie Dyle will go down in Celtic history as winning two titles in the League Cup, but for me, Ronnie's entire Celtic reign was defined by the Champions League. I genuinely believe that. I think if Ronnie, even, you know, he'd, the Maribor game probably got a bit of leeway for, because it was his first season. I think his entire reign hinged on that Malmo game in Sweden, and perhaps even the second half at Celtic Park, because the first half at Celtic Park, Celtic were outstanding under Ronnie Dyla, and Malmo were gone, but Joan Gabergic scores with two goals and everything nearly changed from then.
Yeah.
And if you look at, if Celtic had gone and near Beaton's goal had counted in Sweden or whatever, I think Ronnie potentially still be a Celtic manager right now. I think everything hinged on that, and after that he was always up against it. Then the Europa League, Molde and everything, and he was probably going at that stage, and that's why I think for Brendan, if you get back, the two Astana games were huge, the two Beersheba games and Beersheba away in Israel was such a catalyst for everything that followed, because the belief and the confidence that surged through those players, bear in mind most of them had been involved in the Maribor Malmo games, I think was huge. And I think in terms of confidence, they also looked at the manager, they looked at the fitness he was putting in, they looked at how he was tactically and how he was making them better, adding better players. I don't think they looked back from that.
I think you're right. In the context for me of the story of Brendan Rodgers, has to be seen through the progression from Ronnie Dyla into Brendan. And I'm not saying, you know, people listening to this will know that I was desperate for Ronnie to succeed. because I always got the impression Ronnie was wanting to play the football that Brendan Rodgers does play. You know, he'd gone down to Liverpool when Brendan was manager to study. He'd gone to Dortmund to study Klopp. He'd gone to Barcelona.
I totally agree. Somebody once said to me, one of my friends once said, you know, I like the idea of Ronnie Dyla better than the reality. Mm-hmm. That's what somebody said to me. I think that almost summed it up, right? Ronnie was, he had these ideas and he wanted to get Celtic playing the way Brendan Rodgers was going to play, but for whatever reason he couldn't implement it.
Well,
I don't know why that was, but he just never managed to.
My gut feel is that he was also a bit like Tony Mowbray wasn't good enough, but also was unlucky in that it was the worst season of honest mistakes that had been for quite some time. Ronnie starts having to play European games at Murrayfield.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, so he's on that type of back foot. And then he does get the winter break, and the second half of that season, you think actually the players look like they've now bought into it and started to understand what he wants. Then he fails again, Champions League football, and you just, because I remember after the second half of his first season thinking, right, the players have bought in, we're going to get where we want to go. And then those Champions League qualifiers, you just got the impression that those players who were 50-50 at best, this confirmed to them that he wasn't a guy, and that none of them seemed to play for him.
I don't think the players didn't play for him. I just felt that whatever,
didn't buy into what he did, his message,
or maybe the message wasn't. And maybe again it comes back to communication, to language, because I don't probably think it was maybe. I mean, obviously English isn't Ronnie's first language. English is very good, but I just wonder if he was putting it across and getting, and even the way he was maybe getting the players to really understand what he was trying to do. And, but I also think that season, if you look at the season compared to Brennan's first season, I think Celtic almost lost their way a little bit, even in terms of signings. You know, Carlton Cole, Colin Kazim Richards, and guys like that. And you know, you had Stuart Armstrong in and out of the team, and you had different, you know, it was just, I just thought it was a bad mix. And I think Mulder, I remember being in Mulder that night, and I just for me that was the kind of final, that was the end, you know. And then obviously what happened in the Scottish Cup, but I think Ronnie, I really like Ronnie, I've got a lot of time for him. He's a really good guy, an honest guy, and it just never happened for him. And I don't know if I'd like to think that he does manage a club as big as Celtic one day, because I do think he deserves to, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know if I certainly don't think it was the right time for him at Celtic. I think it was too early for him, far too early for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if it's maybe that will kind of haunt him for a while, you know.
I suppose it depends how he takes it, because I've heard Brendan Rodgers talking about, not that Brendan seems to be someone who readily accepts negativity about him, but I have heard him say that he learned a lot from his departure from Liverpool. And maybe Ronnie will, you often say you learn more in defeat than you learn in success.
Yeah, and I think Ronnie, I think he'd love, I mean, I know for a fact he'd love another shot in perhaps not Scotland but England. And I do think he would learn a lot in terms of what he tried to do. And you know, there's been a lot of stuff in the last couple of weeks, Charles McGrew talking about the diet and they were asked to do, and even the stuff from the Norwegian podcast about the circumstances and coming to Celtic. And he obviously wasn't first choice, and you know, he was offered as an assistant to a couple of people and that never panned out, and then he got the job. And I just think I could see what Celtic were trying to do at the time. I remember the morning vividly when it basically kind of got the word that Ronnie Dyla was going to be Celtic manager, and I remember speaking to people that day, and it was explained probably that what Celtic had been doing with Wanyama and Van Dijk, they felt that this guy was up and coming manager in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Felt this guy had real potential, and that he was going to change things. He was going to be a real creator as a manager, and he was going to make the players fitter, make them play good football, basically what Brendan Rodgers ended up doing.
Yeah.
But they felt that this guy just needed a chance. In hindsight, maybe it was just too early for him. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can do the same with players as you can with a manager, because I don't think going from Scotset manager, you've got a few thousand people. And the biggest thing for the stuff, I don't know if the listeners have read any stuff from the Norwegian podcast, was the reaction. For me, the biggest thing from it was the reaction of Jostein Flo when Ronnie said to him, I'm the new Celtic manager.
Uh-huh.
And it was basically, no, you're not.
Yeah.
What do you mean you're the new Celtic manager? I mean, you're Celtic manager. No, you're joking. I mean, Celtic are a massive club. You can't. It wasn't like, oh, Ronnie. He was just saying this can't be happening because you're this young guy, this young Norwegian guy who's a Scottish manager. And I just look back and think it probably was too early for him. But I do think he's got a lot to offer. And as I say, I mean, I know maybe some listeners think that he got a rough time. Ronnie was eternally, universally popular. Ronnie was a really, really down to earth guy. A lot of time for everybody. As I say, I mean, I'm still in contact with him. I spoke to him last week, and a real, real good guy. And I wish him all the best. And I know he was happy that Brendan Rodgers got the job. I remember speaking to him. I think Brendan Rodgers got appointed on the Friday. I spoke to him on the Saturday to do a bit, and he said, "I'm so happy. That was my choice. That was the guy I wanted. He was the guy I wanted to be Celtic manager. He'll do a great job." And you know, that's a guy that's just walked out, relieved, whatever you want to call it. And he was so gracious towards Brendan Rodgers. This guy will do really well for Celtic. He'll get Celtic to the Champions League. And that was Ronnie's reaction, you know.
So that actually something you touched on there gets back to what I mentioned a wee minute ago about Brendan having the self-confidence and stature to say, no, this is what we're doing. And we just talked about Ronnie was getting talked to about being the assistant manager and suddenly becomes the manager. I mean, he did appear to be a self-confident person, but we can all have in our doubts. Do you think that you're going as assistant manager and suddenly you become manager, you maybe didn't walk in and fill the room with his personality the same way that Brendan Rodgers does?
I think Ronnie would even admit that. I think you know, if you're a player, I remember a contact I got in Sweden had just after the game, after Brendan got a job, so when he said, "I've been speaking to Michael Oakley, he'll send you some quotes from him." I said, "What was he saying?" He said it was something along the lines of, "It shows Celtic are getting serious. You know, you look at manager with real clout." It was to that effect. And the players, I mean, I know the players' reaction was, "Wow, you know, Brendan Rodgers is the manager." Mm-hmm. Whereas, without sounding nasty, when Ronnie got a job, they'd all been googling to see who he was. You know, everybody knew who Brendan Rodgers was. Everybody had watched Brendan Rodgers' Liverpool team. He'd seen what he'd done at Swansea. He'd seen what he'd done for Luis Suarez, Raheem Sterling. So the players were all so excited and so enthusiastic. And I think it's just natural that when Ronnie came in, there was probably a little bit of, "What is this guy?"
You know? And very much the tone when it was coming down to, it's likely to, you know, it's Rodgers or Moyes are Celtic's two lead runners. The tone was very much, "Well, that's great. The Celtic has shown that ambition, but let's talk about who they might actually get as manager."
I know. Because I remember again, you know, obviously you're working and covering it and reporting on it, and you know, it's your job to finish stuff out. And when it was announced Ronnie was leaving, that was the general tone. The main two are Brendan Rodgers and David Moyes. But you know, it might be a long shot. Not even so much for money, because I think it was becoming pretty clear that Celtic were going to be prepared to pay some money. But Scottish football, the Champions League qualifiers. Now, I always say that, see if Celtic had direct entry to the Champions League, you'd have a queue of top managers wanting the job. I think the summer there, David Moyes clearly just decided it was not for me. I don't fancy it. I don't think in hindsight that was the best decision he ever made in his life.
Him and good choice for Celtic.
Well, exactly. And I don't think there was necessarily even a, you know, Celtic, we want him. But I think it was more a case of, let's have a chat to him, let's have a chat to other people, and then we'll see if it all ends up in a wash. For Brendan, again, it's something I touch on a fair bit in a chapter in the book. And the timing was just right. The timing for him was everything. The terms were good. He wanted a challenge. He wanted something different. He had a Celtic background. For Celtic, he ticked every box in terms of, he was used to the spotlight, the pressure. He was good at developing young players. He got it. He got what he was walking into. He knew exactly what he was walking into. He came with a bit of a point to prove after Liverpool. And, you know, was I slightly surprised that he accepted it? Probably, because it's very rare for a manager to go from one of the top English clubs to a Scottish club these days. But see, when you looked at it all and you listened to him talk, you could understand why he did, you know. And he is still a young guy, and that was what he kept saying. He might have 20 years left in management. He's not going to spend all his time in England. I think he'll end up abroad eventually, somewhere down the line. But he kept saying, why not become the Celtic manager? The terms are good, Celtic paid him the going rate. And
one of the things I remember when it was looking like it was a strong possibility, but still people were saying, nah, let's be serious. I remember thinking, yeah, but what are his options in England?
Mm-hmm.
And it was bottom half of the Premiership. And I remember just thinking, he's come across to me as a smart guy. See, once you go into that pool of managers, you're in a vicious, a permanent cycle of 18 months and your team gets relegated and you're sacked.
Mm-hmm. I think he's been there and done it. And see, once you're the Liverpool manager, do you really want to go, do you want to become the Stoke manager or the Sunderland manager or anything like that? I don't think, and again, it was towards the end of the season.
Mark Hughes has been at Man City.
Yeah.
He's now Stoke manager and he's doing for Stoke a great job. He is never ever going to get talked about getting the Arsenal job, the Man United job, the Man City job, the Tottenham job, or the Chelsea job.
Exactly, and that's why even towards the end of last season, people were saying, before Brennan signed his contract, oh, but if an English club, and I kept saying he would only go where it was, you know, real one of the top teams in Arsenal. And Arsenal, I think he'd have a decision to make, right? But at that stage, I was just thinking, he's been at Swansea, who are a good club. He's been at Liverpool, who are one of the biggest clubs. Why would he then go into that sort of merry-go-round of just becoming the Watford manager again? I think he's a guy who wants to have a good career. He's had a great career, he wants to have a really good career, but he also wants to have experiences. So, as I'm saying, he came to Celtic. And people were surprised down south. I know people were surprised, thinking, what is he doing? But then you look at Brendan Rodgers and whatever he's wanting to do in management, you'll always remember season 2016-17, you know?
Yeah.
He's created a lasting legacy, a bit of history, everything. And, you know, sometimes I think people are too quick to chase players as well. English football. It's not the be all and end all. And you speak to a lot of guys like Alan Thompson, Chris Sutton, guys that played at a decent level in England, they'll tell you their best days were at Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's going to get good money? And they guys got good money at Celtic. Brennan's getting good money at Celtic. But what he did last season for me will be, he'll remember that for the rest of his career. And that's why I never ever thought he was going to just jump ship and go to some mediocre English team, because he's been there and done it.
Yeah,
he doesn't need to do it again.
So, getting back to the book, one of the things, I've not read the whole book, but I have read bits of it, and I suppose again this is the difference between Ronnie and Brendan, because you said you don't talk about specific games, but you talk about his man management.
Yeah.
His management of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was interesting, you talked, you know, his motivational techniques for the cup final, for example.
Mm-hmm. The cup final stuff, I mean, it was, the two cup finals for me were quite interesting in terms of the messages, the motivational messages that were left in the Scottish Cup final for the locals. And most people listening have probably seen Michael Oastley holding his up by now, and that was just something that he felt that would give the players that extra impetus. He had a great season, but he got in contact with all his families, managed to get these messages, he played them at a team meeting, then when he got to Hampden the next day at the lockers, see his envelopes, every player's got a kind of private message from his family.
Mm-hmm.
Just give them that little extra, you know, to me it was a classy touch that showed how much he thinks and talks about the small details, and for me that was a big thing. The League Cup final was another one. Obviously the players, it's such a hectic schedule, they've got Champions League games, cup games, league games, but they want to have a Christmas night out, they want to have a break.
Mm-hmm.
He says fine, but the focus is on football, so if you want to go you can book it, obviously see what happens with the final, but he doesn't want them to turn up for the team at Telford Cup final with different suitcases and bags and trying to remember if they've got their shoes for the dancing or anything like that.
Yeah.
Want a bit of, so he said these are the ground rules, you hand the cases in early. And you can just imagine after the final, you know, they hand the cases in during the week, after the final, won the final, they're celebrating, the next thing the suitcases get wheeled in and the boys are away for a couple of days to go and celebrate. You know, small touches like that for me show his man management, show his attention to detail, and show that he knows how to get the best out of the players. There's a million different little examples of that throughout the, mm-hmm. throughout the season. You know, it was he's even if you go back to the way he managed to persuade Mr. Dembele to come to Celtic, mm-hmm. you know, and the meeting with him and the attention to detail and how much he knew about his background. And I mean, Mr. Dembele walked out of that meeting completely won over, completely sold in Celtic, and sold in Brendan Rodgers, because Brendan just turned on the charm and just basically said, you'll be my number one, you'll be this, you'll be that, I know about you, I know you can do this, I know you can do that, but I'll make you better at this, I'll make you better at that. And mm-hmm. threw a big presentation with him, did the same with Scott Brown, you know, right at the start of the season.
Yeah, because that was one of the things. I mean, you know, the rumours were that there was the likes of Brown and Stokes and Mulgrew and Commons who were not big fans of Ronnie Dyla, and the thing that was really noticeable was first thing Brendan Rodgers does is invite Brown down to his house mm-hmm. for a meal.
But also, I mean, I remember the first day, and Scott had struggled with injuries last season. I know people, I think Scott had time for Ronnie. I know he had time for Ronnie. Last season he was hampered by injury more than probably people recognised. I mean, Scott was playing in games that most people just said, you know what, I'm injured, and it probably wasn't doing himself any favours. But I mean, he was in pain even driving to and from training. You know, he had tendonitis in both hamstrings. He was really, really struggling. He wasn't doing himself justice. And we thought right at the start as well, and we probably didn't at that stage realise, in terms of us on the beat reporting, how much he was struggling. But you always wonder, is Brendan going to fancy him? Is Brendan going to mm-hmm. keep him as captain? But in his first day, he was really, really, see Brendan, I'm talking about when he got unveiled, Scott Brown's my captain, Scott's a warrior, I've got a lot of time for Scott, I was speaking to him soon. Maybe even that day phoned him and said, right, I want to meet. And he spent 4 hours talking, you know, and again he went through his processes with him, he went through everything he wants to do, everything he was planning to do with Celtic that season, and basically said to him, I need you with me, I need you here, standing on my side, leading the way. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Scott had said to me, ask Scott, I mean, the first question he basically asked him, how long are you left? And Scott said, probably 2 years. And he said, no, nonsense, you're only 31, you've got a lot longer left, get yourself fit. He says, we'll work on a plan, we'll work on a fitness plan, we'll look after your body, we'll get you right. He says, you can lead for me for a long time to come. And you imagine Scott Brown hearing that. Mm-hmm. And you can also imagine Scott Brown going back to the rest of these players, which again is smart man management, saying this guy's top notch, you know. And I think straight away he won over Scott. And I think from then, I talk about the excitement of the players and everything, I think as soon as all the other players started seeing Brendan at work up close, I think they were just blown away with how good he was. And people say that when you look at him on the training ground, he's a good manager and he'll talk away and he's good talking, you know, he's a good ambassador for Celtic, but on the training pitch, he's apparently second to none. I remember speaking to Scott Allen in Slovenia, and Scott, you bear in mind, Scott Allen probably knew he wasn't going to really feature. Yeah. And he was saying, explicitly as a coach, he said, he's unbelievable. He said, if something's going wrong in the training ground, if there's a drill that's going, you know, maybe not going, he says, he'll stop it and see within 2 seconds, you'll know what you should be doing straight away, you'll know where you were going wrong. You go bang, start again, and everything's so much better. You know, that's what he said. He said his ability just to get himself, communicate himself, to get himself across and get the best out of players in a training ground capacity is unbelievable.
So do you think his success is probably a threefold thing? He had the stature when he arrived. Mm. He knows how to manage people, which is enhanced by having the stature. Mm. And he knows how to do things in the training ground because he's got the stature and he's got the man management. Yep. Those all three.
It's a sort of perfect mix, and that's why if you look at, you know, Celtic pay top dollar to get Brendan Rodgers as a manager, but what they've got in return is he's made good signings in Scott Sinclair, Mr. Dembele, guys like that, but he's also added value in terms of getting the best out of players. So Stuart Armstrong, for example,
yeah,
unbelievable. Kieran Tierney's blossomed. Scott Brown's back to his very, very best, probably playing better than his other players for Celtic, I would say. Callum McGregor, unbelievable. Dedrick Boyata. Dedrick Boyata for me was just
finished.
It was a matter of time before he going. Then you look at Dedrick Boyata in the last couple of months of the season, mm-hmm. it's absolutely excellent. Samirovic is about to go, he's in Turin getting a medical, mm-hmm. obviously doesn't go to plan, but at the end of the season he's a stalwart, a mainstay. I think the difference he's made in players make a loose league and all.
Yeah.
Almost played every minute of every game, a guy that people were saying was injury prone.
Yeah, I mean, was it pace them like 20 games a season before and 5 games a season before that or something.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so, but then you've got a guy who, you know, there were so many different players, so many subplots, and that's what I'm talking about, the reason for writing a book. There were so many different things happening within the course of the season, and there's chapters on players that, you know, that's knitted in towards the chronology of the season, but there's chapters on Moussa, on Scott Sinclair, Scott Brown, Kieran Tierney, Craig Gordon as well, and Stuart Armstrong and guys like that, that try and tell their story against the backdrop of the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
and how it unfolded for them as well, you know, and how what Brendan has done for them, where they were, and they've all got different stories to tell, but it's fascinating to see, for example, Scott Brown's written off, comes back to become the captain of a team that won an invincible treble. Scott Sinclair pretty much written off in England, you know, comes up here, wins all the Player of the Year awards. Moussa Dembele, this young guy wanted by everybody, comes up, takes the place by storm. Craig Gordon is in the team, he's out of the team, but January people are, Chelsea want to sign for £3 million, and becomes a sweeper keeper that's pinging passes left, right and centre. So I'm trying to explore within it the reasons for it, what Brendan's done for them, what the players have done for themselves, and it's all told against sort of.
It's quite a difficult discipline. Once you said it was about September time, you said, right, can I write this book? But every day you're under pressure from an editor to fill pages in that paper.
Yeah.
Is it quite a difficult discipline? Because surely you then must have to hold something back.
No, it's not. I think.
Or is it just completely different?
It's just a different thing, because there's. I mean, I'm always looking for the wee gems of information, the wee little nuggets that might get lost in the grand scheme of. You know, there's one chapter to go back to the Champions League, but again, it can expose Brendan's way of thinking. It's around the Beersheba game, and we spoke to him one day just about his substitutions in the home game, because again, like Astana, it's 3-0 to Celtic, then it's 3-2, and suddenly you're thinking, well, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So instead of just holding the lead, he sort of gambled and puts on Dembele, and I think Beaton come on in midfield, and just asked him. And this isn't stuff that maybe going to capture headlines at the time, because there's another narrative, there's another bigger story, whatever. But he went through the whole thinking behind his substitution, and the chapter's called Never Die Wondering, because that's his philosophy. He'll never die wondering, he'll never ever go back and think, what if?
Yeah.
He'd rather take the gamble, he'd rather go and make the change, knowing that night he can, you know, rest easy, say, well, at least I did something. And it was the same in Beersheba for the away leg. I mean, Celtic played three formations that night. And that for me was a problem for Ronnie. I feel like, back to the Malmo game, that in the sideline that night, I'm thinking, does he, you know, he didn't react, he didn't, it clearly wasn't working, but there was no reaction, whereas Brendan sent out, I think it was a 4-2-3-1 to start with, and then went to a sort of diamond in the middle of the park, and Celtic ended up a back three or a back five. That's a guy who is willing to change, and willing to say, you know what, I probably didn't get that right, but I'll change. And it was the same with Beersheba. I mean, the place, I mean, I remember that game, and it was an unbelievable game, the home game. But you're thinking, he's gambling here, he's putting on a striker, thinking, you know what, get another couple of goals. And
it's a brave
goals,
thing to do, because goals. I always think about media. At half time we were losing that game, but you were sitting there thinking, I wouldn't be surprised if we ended up getting a result in this game, because they didn't look that great. But Strachan made the wrong choice, instead of thinking, right, things are not going well, I'm just going to shut up shop here and take it back to Celtic Park because they're not a good team. He was watching at half time and thought, they're not a good team, I can go for this.
No. And maybe because Celtic were at home, he's thinking it's a little bit different, but it took a lot of bravery. And when he explained that, and that's what I'm saying in terms of you asking a discipline, I was always in it. Once I'd kind of thought to myself, I think there's maybe a book in this, you need to obviously wait and see how things pan out, but there was just this small details, keep using that phrase, but that's what I was kind of, it's the stuff that, you know, for example, I was talking to one of my friends, I was sitting in a pub one night, it was before Celtic played Albion Rovers, and I'm talking to one of my friends, an Aberdeen fan, and he says, Celtic will beat them 7-0, whatever. He said, they don't even need to turn around, and he says something along, I bet Brendan Rodgers didn't even know one Albion Rovers player. And I said, no, he's watched them. What do you mean he's watched them? I'm saying, well, they've got a process to go through, for every single team they play. And he said, no, Albion Rovers. I said, no, Albion Rovers. I said, he'll go through the same process for Albion Rovers as he does for Borussia Mönchengladbach or Barcelona. He looks at videos, he gets somebody go and watch them, he looks at the way they play, looks at their formation, looks at them defending free kicks, corners, blah, blah, blah. That's what a proper manager should do. And one of my mates said, is that true? Now, that was, something that was almost just lost, but I'm immersed in it. I'm living, breathing this every day. It's my job to know all this sort of stuff. But I just felt the longer it was going, there were so many little nuggets of information that were probably getting lost in the. And I just thought that this is the sort of essence of a book, that it just gives people a bit more information in the sort of behind the scenes, how he goes about his job. I mean, I remember against Sturm Graz for the friendly at the start of the season, one of the local journalists was there. He's a really young guy. And he said to me, do you think Brendan would speak to me about Sturm Graz? And I said, well, just ask him. I mean, he's an approachable guy. And he said, so after we'd finished, Mr. Rogers could ask you a couple of questions about the Austrian team. He said, no problem. So 5 minutes later, the guy comes over and says, that was unbelievable. He knew everything about them. He said, oh, he'd been looking at footage, and that was for a friendly. And I said, that was the sort of, that was how into it he was, you know. And again, I think that's a theme throughout the whole thing, that he wasn't just up here for a jolly. He wasn't up here thinking Scottish football was below him and it was going to be easy. He was determined to do everything he possibly could to make a success and to be a success. And, you know, he threw his heart and soul into the job, and okay, he was getting paid really, really well to do it, but you could tell last season he did the job properly.
If you set your standards high,
exactly,
then everybody's got to follow. And the minute you drop your standards, that's when you drop your standards, because you don't watch Sturm Graz, you don't watch Albion Rovers, and then little other things start to fade away.
That's what he said. I mean, he was afraid of it. He said, once you get loose, then, you know, it's hard to get that back. And that was for me, again, having seen Gordon Strachan, Ronnie, Neil Lennon, and Tony Mowbray at close quarters, that for me was the real impressive thing about the way Celtic approached the season, the way Brendan Rodgers, it was relentless. I know that was a word that was used a lot, but they never ever let their standard, you know. I know how hard they worked in training. You spoke to the players, and it was never it's fine, you can, you know, it was, you're going to work as hard as possible. And he spoke about it himself in terms of 2 days before the cup final. He basically stopped training, Scottish cup final, because he wasn't happy with the standard. He just said, it's not good enough, I expect better. And it wasn't a case of, you're as fit as you're going to be and what's the point of training now. It was, no, this is a standard you attain. You've hit that standard all season, you're not going to drop. And, you know, I think that was the impressive thing for me throughout the season, how dedicated, relentless his attitude was, never going to waver.
So how do you see that developing on into this coming season? Because there's always a temptation that when you've been working flat out, that, well, that's a one-off. There's always a temptation that was a one-off to do that. So how do you think next season's going to look?
I just can't see, is it a one-off? I mean, he said himself, Brendan, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, maybe. To go through 47 domestic games without losing one, to win everything, is unbelievable. Can Celtic do it again? They've got the talent to do it again. I just think low averages probably won't happen. But I do think they'll get better, because I think he's made players better. If you look at where Celtic were this time 12 months ago, if you look at Celtic at the start of July 12 months ago to now, they're in a totally different place. Players might leave, players will come. But I just think everybody's on board with what he wants to do. He's not trying to get to know people, he's not trying to get his ideas across. Tactically, technically, fitness wise, they're in a much, much better place. So I can only see him getting better. I think domestically, I mean, he'll want to dominate again. I think Europe's a big thing. I think Europe's huge. But I think he wants to progress again.
Do you think, from my perspective, what I could see is we might lose or drop points more domestically this season? Because I can see him, my reading of it, and you've been closer to me, my reading of it is, most important thing is win the League Cup. That's what Martin O'Neill's attitude was in his first season, just get a trophy in. That's what Strachan did. They then played the League Cup the English way, or playing your young players thereafter, but the first time they went for it. And so I do wonder whether he now has set his sights on Europe, and we might see the likes of Ralston, Aitchison and the like get more game time as he's preparing. the established players for Champions League football being the be all and end all.
I think he will want to blood one of these guys, these young boys. He did it last season, did towards the end of the season as well, but I just can't see Brendan having kind of seen him at close quarters last year ever willingly putting out a weakened team. I think he looks upon it as he's got a squad. Mm-hmm. So Callum McGregor, for example, if he'd probably the best Celtic players next for last season, Callum McGregor probably wouldn't feature that prominently, but you look at what Callum McGregor contributed. Look at what Lee Griffiths contributed at the start of the season. He also had injuries and whatever start and end of the season. So I think he'll look at guys. Is Johnny Hayes going to play every game? There's probably Alcine's going to come in, Scott Sinclair in and out, Callum McGregor, Kouassi. I think there'll be a core again about 20-22 players, but I think he'll have his strongest team in mind for the biggest games. Mm-hmm. But I think throughout the season at other points, I think he'll just chop and change his team. But I don't think he'll do it to willingly say, I'll just play a weakened team. I just don't think that's his mindset. I really don't. And I do get that the League Cup maybe doesn't have as much importance, carrying as much importance this season as it did last season, but seeing how he worked last, I don't think he would just give away a trophy. I generally don't. I think he'll go again. I think he'll want to win a treble again. Because
that's his standard.
That's his standard. And I don't think he would make excuses for the players and say, oh, it's fine. I think he'll want to go out and win the treble again. I do. I think, you know, yeah, to me, Brendan Rodgers is in Scotland with a real, he wants to make history. He did it last season, but I think he'll want to go again. Saying that, I think Europe's huge. I think he's got real ambitions to do well in Europe. Whether that's last 16 of the Champions League, whether that's getting the group stage of the Champions League and then in the Europa League, there's an argument that, you know,
finishing third in Europe
would not be
quite
better.
From a coefficient points perspective, let's be honest, it's highly likely if we do exceptionally well and finish second in a group stage, we will get knocked out in the next round. If we do reasonably well or quite well and finish third, you can get a bad draw, but it's highly likely we'll get at least another two rounds.
I'm always of opinion. I have this debate with people at times. I think it's Celtic. You get into the Champions League, get to group stages, and then go into Europa League every year. I think I agree with you. I mean, there's only so many times Celtic have done it. What, 3-4 times since Gordon's time? Mm-hmm. And AC Milan, Barcelona, and Juventus were the teams. Mm-hmm. Now, the best one in the world, I mean, the Milan game especially, Celtic were really, really unlucky. But it's hard to go, you know, it's hard for teams like Arsenal with the money they've got to go and compete. But if Celtic in the Europa League, you looked at the teams in the sort of last stages last year. Aye. Celta Vigo, Ajax, Lyon, okay, Man United won it. But I think Brendan would try and say the team could go and have a go. I mean, again, it would be very, very hard to go and win it, but I think he would fancy getting to the last stages at the very least. So but you can't really come out and say that, because it's almost you're willingly wanting to put a tournament.
Yeah.
But I do think that most people would agree that that would be a great aim. And I, he spoke about it when he gets contract, that it's a challenge for him. The Celtic's smaller budget than the European superpowers to go and build a team that can compete in Europe. But I think he's got, you know, a twin to dominate domestically and do well in Europe.
Being able to get for me, it's a learning curve all the time, and being able to get the two draws against Man City and draw away in Germany, mm-hmm. they were big results for me for planning for this coming mm-hmm. season.
But I agree with you. I also think if you go back further, I think the Nou Camp game was massive in a totally different way. I think that was maybe the one time this season where, having got to the Champions League, having beaten Rangers 5-1, it was a case of, for some people, I think they were so tired that night and they were just getting the run around, mm-hmm. and they weren't getting in Barcelona's face, and it was, you know, I think after that game they realised that that can't happen again, and the way Brendan Rodgers wanted them to play was meant that that couldn't be tolerated. You know, you had to get stuck in, you had to be mm-hmm. I don't think Celtic are a dirty team,
but we didn't commit any fouls.
Exactly, and that's the thing. If you look at the way guys developed, like Stuart Armstrong, that you know, that physical. You know, sure, Armstrong's a physical midfield player now, I think. You know, it's maybe not. He's not a hatchet man there, but he gets stuck in. And Brendan always makes this excuse: get close to people and touch them. And what he means by that is make life difficult for them. And that never happened against Barcelona. And I saw a real difference between the Barcelona game, for example, if you take that in isolation, to the home Man City game, because the one thing Celtic did do that night was get stuck in.
The other thing I got that I noticed was after that Barcelona night, Brendan started talking about Celtic need to play our style of football. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if we're in the Champions League, we're playing Barcelona, so we're going to defend here and just not get doing. Mm-hmm. Play like teams play when they come to Celtic Park. And after he tried a wee, which was alien to him, right, we've tried it once and we're not doing it again.
It's not going to happen. And that's what I'm saying. And I think you could tell the shackles are off against Man City at home. An unbelievable game of football to watch, but the start Celtic made that night was exactly what you'd expect from a Brendan Rodgers. It was a Celtic under Brendan Rodgers you got to know, and that's what I'm saying. Whereas if you look at the Barcelona game, it's unrecognisable. The home game, sorry, the game, Camp Nou, because it was just quite passive, and I think it was fatigue in some ways as well.
We weren't expecting a doing, though.
But not 7-0. But I'd a bad feeling, because I'd been in. I get sent out a bit earlier just to do some preview stuff, and watched Barcelona get beat off Alaves on Saturday night. And after that, I say this could be, because I could just tell the fans weren't happy, and I thought Messi, Neymar, and Suarez hadn't played together, and I think it was only one of them played that night. And then it was like Luis Enrique said, "Oh, it's okay, we're going to have everybody back." And I think they just came out again, a point to prove, and they were unbelievable. And if you actually look at it, it's maybe a bit harsh on Celtic players, because if you look at, I mean, Barcelona took 6 off PSG, 4 or 5 off Manchester, so they've been on to beat teams by a lot of goals that season. They were a very, very good team, but I think the players realise that, as you're saying, you have to play a Celtic style of football. You can't just defend and stand off these guys. And Mönchengladbach at home is probably a strange one, in the sense that Celtic just never get going. But Mönchengladbach away, Man City home and away, and even Barcelona at home, it was decent performances, and I think it's something to build on for this season.
And that's the thing, actually, that bugged me about the tone or the style of the way that certain people in Scottish football have talked about it's not good for our game that Celtic are so good. Because the tone of the way that they've said that is, so Celtic should be coming down to their level, whereas the whole thing about Celtic playing Champions League is we go and we play Barcelona and we learn we've got to improve dramatically to get closer to them. For me, having a team as good as Celtic in Scottish football at the moment, the team should be looking, going, right, okay, Dan McInnes should have spent the whole summer. What are the incremental changes that I can make at Aberdeen? We're not going to bridge 30 points, but what are the incremental changes I can do at Aberdeen that moves that from 30 points to Celtic will not have the same again, so Celtic come back a wee bit in terms of points. How can we improve 10 points from where we were to get that much closer?
No, I think you should always strive to be the best you can be, and it's up to everybody else to try and catch
you.
I don't, you know. I also think as well, Scottish football, people talk about in terms of the other leagues, it's almost as if the other leagues are won by different teams every year. Or not?
No.
You know? It's always, you know.
Well, in fact, that's one of the things that you notice, you touched on European football. I would be surprised if there's any teams in the next couple of rounds that Celtic might play who are any different from the teams that Celtic might have played last season or the season before.
It's the same. I mean, we all obviously focus on that, and I do a lot of the sort of kind of foreign stuff and speak to people, and it's the same. Malmo's and Karabag and Astana and Hapoel Beersheba, they're all on the same boat
as Celtic, of your domestic levels here, and then you get this wad of cash from playing European football that takes you that, you know, Celtic will be £70 million ahead of the second best earning team in Scotland this year, which just puts us on another level, so that we'll be £70 million better than them. And the ability for the second best financial team in Scotland to get close to Celtic, we need to really mess up.
And that's why, and I get, so the Champions League money is a huge thing, but it's also not as if it's an easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not easy for Celtic to get access to that money. You know, you look at how hard it was against Maribor, Liga Warsaw that year, Malmo. It's for the players, it's pressure. It's for, you know, for Brendan Rodgers this year again. I mean, he said after the Hapoel Beersheba game, it was the most nervous he'd ever been at the side of a pitch as a football manager. Mm-hmm. That's a guy that was going for a Premier League title,
yeah,
for Liverpool. You know, he wasn't that nervous from the Chelsea game.
No.
You know, he was more nervous because you've got so much riding on it. So much riding on it. I just think European football, I think it can, obviously it helps financially, but I just think that Celtic should just be looking to attain as high a level as it possibly can and go and compete. And if it takes him away, then it takes him away. You know?
And again, when you then put it in the context of the teams who are the tier below Celtic domestically, they can't beat teams who are the 47th ranked country in Europe.
Exactly. I mean, I do wonder where the coefficient thing's going to go though, because
take Celtic out of it.
I know
Scotland plummets.
Mm-hmm. And that's but it's going to obviously have for Celtic as well. And I don't know. I think there'll be change coming in terms of the Champions League, Europa League format. I don't know what they're going to do, but I do think something will happen, because
Well, again, it gets back to the point you just made. It then starts to get boring for lots of fans when it is the same. It's the same core of clubs that Celtic are facing now. So the same core of teams, a handful of them are going to get to touch the revenues of the big Champions League, mm-hmm, and the big Europa League group stuff. And they are going to join in with the same core of teams who every year are guaranteed the riches of the Champions, mm-hmm, League.
Not exactly.
And you can start to see things. It's stuck in a three-tier system.
Mm-hmm. And so should there be three tiers of European competition again?
Yeah.
Maybe there should be. I don't know. But again, it brings back to the point we're talking about as well. For Celtic, every year, if they can get into the Champions League, get into the group stages.
There are teams who are ranked better than Celtic, who the reason they're ranked better than Celtic is because they play a lot of Europa League football.
Yeah. Europa League football is very good for the coefficient, and that's what I'm saying. And again, you probably couldn't admit it, but if you maybe privately say to some of the players, even the management team, would you fancy that? Maybe you'd take it.
But I suppose you can do it in a way that doesn't sound negative, because you can say we finished fourth in the group last season. Our target this season is to finish third, mm-hmm, so it's a positive in terms of your moving forward. Mm-hmm. But you're deep down thinking, because third's actually, I mean, actually getting back to your point, I think ideal for me would be if we could manage to get Champions League football for the next four seasons, that three of those we finish third, to get Europa League football, see where that takes us. And maybe maybe the final one of those finish second, mm-hmm, just to see if we progressed enough to, mm-hmm, to go beyond last 16, mm-hmm, Champions League.
No, I'd agree. I would agree. It's but Europa League would be interesting, I do think.
So finally, you're back on your book. Mm-hmm. How do people get your book?
You can get it through the Backpage Press website. It's in Amazon, it's in Waterstones, it's in other bookshops, good and bad. And it's out now. So yeah, that's it, it's available. And that's the second book, so I don't know if we'll have a third, we'll see.
See how this one sells. See what pays for your yacht. Okay, David Field, thanks very much.
Thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed that podcast. I found it quite interesting. The player music is a tribute to the Celtic fan, Mr. Tony Hadley, and the very, very sad news that he is no longer in Spandau Ballet again. And I just thought I'd pick a tune that was relevant to the game, the first competitive game that we are going to play this season. So, on to the quiz question, which allows you to win a copy of David's book. And so the question, which Brendan Rodgers gave the answer to in the interview that we had on this podcast when he became Celtic manager, and there is another clue if you know a bit more about Brendan's family. So the quiz question is, who was Brendan Rodgers' Celtic hero when he was growing up? So, clues in the nature of Brendan and his family. He gave the answer in the podcast which we had here when we interviewed Brendan when he signed for the club. Who was Brendan Rodgers, Celtic childhood hero. Email in your name and address so we can post out the book to you to podcasts@celticunderground.net. As I record this, it is Thursday the 6th of July. To give people who might be on their holiday a chance to answer, all successful answers have to be in by 5 p.m. on Friday the 21st of July. That's Friday the 21st of July, 5 p.m. Get your answers in to podcasts, plural, at CelticUnderground.net. Who is your... who is Brendan's Celtic hero? We're playing out with Spandau Ballet in memory of Celtic fan Tony's departure and the Linfield game. And we started off last week. I said, was there a better intro than Superstition by Stevie Wonder? Somebody suggested the song that we started with, Waterfront by Simple Minds. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night. As the drums begin to fade, when we made our love on wasteland, to the barricades.